Welcome to Spiritually Fierce, the podcast. I am your host, Dr. Ricky Jane Adams, principal and founder of the Institute for Intuitive Intelligence and creator of the Spiritually Fierce movement. Spiritually Fierce is not just a phrase. It is a movement of awakening consciousness of which we are all a part, if we want to be. In each episode, we'll explore what it means to be spiritually fierce, how to become it, and why it is the revolution in consciousness that will save the world. Join me and my fierce guests for deep conversations on spirituality beyond the trinkets and superstitions of the new age that will support you to increase your power to serve. Hello, dear beloveds, and welcome to Spiritually Fierce, the podcast. It is season 3, and we are in the theme of transformation. And this season, I am blessed to be hanging out with some of my favorite people, the graduates of the Institute. And today I have the glorious Bhavna, who is coming to us from India, where she lives. I'm going to tell you a little bit about Bhavna. She is a current postgraduate priestess and has graduated from our year-long training. And we have had, I don't know how many years it is now, but I feel like we've had quite a good amount of time in each other's lives, and I'm incredibly grateful for that. Later this year, we will be on retreat in India, and we'll get to be together in real life for the first time, which will be glorious. But let me tell you a little bit about Bhavna before she tells you about herself and her amazing work in the world. Bhavna is an MBA, an intuitive intelligence trainer. She is trained and certified in past life regression, NLP, transactional analysis, acupressure, ADHD, and is currently studying for her second master's and doing her spiritual directorship. She's also a Reiki master. Whoa. That is a lot of amazingness, my darling. And I am so grateful that you are here looking so beautiful and getting to shine your light so brightly to our audience. I would love for you to describe to us, what is it that you do? How would you describe your service in the world?
I would start by saying that I work with women and help them be unapologetic. I think that's really my work.
Yeah.
And, you know, all our lives, we across different cultures, we've been taught to be apologetic about our emotions, about who we are, about our voices, about our sexuality, and a lot more. But these four majorly cover what we are most apologetic for. And I'm here to change that because I think it's really effing time that we did that.
I love that you are muting your swear words. You are so allowed to swear, but I think you're too graceful to probably drop the F-bomb.
Oh, for me to come this far, I think it's taken 5 years of being with you. I would say that.
I have training in swearing. I love hearing all of that. And of course, it is a mission close to my heart. How did this work begin for you? How did this rise to the surface of all the amazing things that you're qualified in? How did you decide this is where you wanted to be?
I think through my life, and of course, this is in hindsight that I talk about it, but throughout my life, I think there were two things that I always knew in my heart. I didn't know how to articulate them as a five-year-old, but I always knew that one, that we are, we are infinite consciousness, which means that whatever is taking place outside, I am stronger than what I think I'm believing, or I'm more than what I'm just the human existence. And the second thing was that, all of us are very interconnected to each other. There's always something that is taking place. And as I grew up, I think the background that I'm from a state in India, which has traditionally had the highest female genocide. And also from a community that is particularly very steeped in patriarchy. And given the, and plus with that combined, the third combination was, there's a lot of traditionalism in one part of my family. And so while growing up, I actually disassociated myself completely from my lineage. I did not, so my father's side of the family, I would have a lot of arguments saying that I want nothing to do with them. I think they don't have manners, they don't know what to do. And this is not, I don't remember the words now, but I essentially disassociated myself from that. And I grew up with a very strong-minded mother and somebody, my father, who didn't know how to support that. And all I saw around me was confusion, like nobody knew what they were doing. And I could feel the amazing women, but I said, why would you act a certain way? And I think in the last, it was only when I started my spiritual journey almost 25 years ago now, that I started to feel that I wanted to have a voice. And fast forward, I did the corporate gig for 18 years and all of that. And then coming back, when I reconnected to my spiritual self, because I did lose myself in between, when I reconnected myself to myself, I realized that I really want to change something in the world. Because I, again, in the corporate world, I saw we women couldn't talk. Either we had to masculine ourselves and then be a different version of ourselves, or we would just be domesticated. And I would get so angry about it. I didn't like it, but I also did that. I did become a bit of emasculated myself. And so I think a combination of that really triggered a lot of fire in me and frustration. And I said, I have to do something. But it took me 5 years to really get to where I am. I did, try different things. I started with the first idea of opening a school in my village, but I realized that education has fast forward many years. It's just that I was not in touch with, what's happening there. So, and I said, I need to do something that I have. I need to honor my experience, my heritage as an individual as well, and then use that to fuel what I want to bring into the world. So it's been a journey.
I love hearing that. And I would love you to tell us when you came back to your spirituality, that turning point you described, what happened at that time that brought you back into it?
At that time, I didn't realize, but a lot of things were happening. And I used to work in a really good organization. I was there for about 7, 8 years, did a variety of roles, loved each moment of it. But I had been getting this for several years, this frustration and dissatisfaction. I didn't know what that was. It was only when I actually took a break. I literally took a break. I was fortunate that my boss was supportive of that. And when I took that break for a couple of months, that's when I realized I was actually burnt out because I had got so disconnected from my spiritual self. I was so disconnected. I said, and though I was doing a lot of things, I would always, chant, I would do certain practices and all of that. That was always there. So I was so grateful that I was not so broken that I didn't know where to find myself. I knew that this had to be fixed. And so the first thing that I did was I said, okay, I do need help, and I also want to delve into different things. And like we always do, once we put that out in the universe shows us different ways that we can get help from. And I started to actually recertify myself in a lot of modalities, trying to, and I didn't go all out, but the ones that felt right. And I said truth, because whenever you learn, you have to go through a transformation. And I think that's what started to happen. And it was in the third level. I think around 2019, I went back on Facebook, which I wasn't on for the longest time. And I was meeting these incredible women who were outstanding and very fierce. I said, what is happening? And then I saw a common thread between all of them. And I remember reading the about the Institute of Intuitive Intelligence. I said, what? I'm gonna use the word again. I said, what a effing gorgeous name is that? Like, who gave that name? Like, who would do that? And then when I went to the website, I saw that, there's a, it's not just woo-woo, it is a lot of science. And I said, I would love to know more about this because we, there is such disconnection in daily life, right? That we say, oh, something is woo-woo, I have nothing to do with it. Oh, science has nothing to do with woo-woo, and we are not going to combine spirituality and science. And when I saw the website, honestly, I think it was, this is what I want to bring to the world. I want people to know that just because you don't see something, doesn't mean there isn't evidence of it. It's just that we may not be tuned into the frequency of seeing the evidence of it. And I think, yeah, I think it was really looking at the profiles of all the gorgeous women, and it was, Shanae, Renee, Kia, and of course, then I came across yours. I said, okay. And I think I was like a, I was wondering, I do want to talk to her, but what do I talk to her about? And I remember the first time that I finally had the courage to send you a messenger message, because I had never used messenger, and you were on a flight to Bali, and I couldn't believe that you responded. First of all, I said, oh, somebody responds as well, really? Somebody's response to a stranger. I think that moment, that, and you responded, like we had a bit of back and forth, I don't know if you remember. And I think at that moment, to see the humanness of that response, I said, okay, there is something there. I'm getting goosebumps as I talk about it, but I think, yeah, I think that was really the gorgeous women who graduated and were in the program.
I love hearing all of that and so much richness in what you share. It always strikes me, Bhavna, that you exist at the nexus of so many different ideas and worlds. And you are based in India, but you have a lot of clients and friends and colleagues and students that are all over the world. You are a woman who's chosen a less traditional path, but you come from a traditional family. You are deeply spiritual, but it comes from lots of different places, not just from a Hindu foundation. And you're at this meeting point of so many different places, ideas, thoughts, and you navigate it all so beautifully. Is there anything about it that is really hard? Like, or what's the hardest thing about being, a woman of the world? I guess it feels like that's what you are. And I'm really interested in understanding more about your lived experience.
Oh, well, it's really difficult being a woman of the world. I think all of us who listen to the podcast later would also know or realize or acknowledge it to themselves. I think the first thing is to acknowledge that it is hard. It is effing hard. I can't believe I'm using all the words so many times. But anyhow, and I think the first, so once we acknowledge that, I think that's the time when we start to accept all that we're doing. Because all the women that I come across, I can't tell you, Ricky, I mean, they are phenomenal. I mean, they come to me as clients, and they would have heard of me from wherever they would have heard of me. And I mean, in their own right, they are so much, but nobody's allowed them to shine their light. No, in fact, everybody's told them otherwise, and they have dimmed themselves, and they have stifle their own voices because they didn't know what else to do. And what starts to happen is, I think it starts to show up in our body. So I think the most difficult task is to trust that what you're feeling is actually the right thing. Trusting your intuition, in other words, is the most difficult thing, but that's also the really the right thing, the most right thing for us being in today's world, which is nothing less than a war every day. I mean, I don't want to, belittle the actual physical ones that are taking place, but it is, coming, like you said. And I think that's, it took me a long time to also accept that I will always have this chaos around me. I will always have it. And because I have the resilience, it has to, I have to talk about it. I have to rise above it. That is part of my work in the world. I would be doing a disservice to my clients if I'm not able to show them. I mean, it is every moment, every day is like, today I had a choice. Tomorrow, my mom's surgery is happening. And you know how close I am to her. And I said, no, I am still going to do this. I'm still going to be there. And it's going to be phenomenal. So there's a lot of things that are hard for women, I think. And we need to accept and be okay. Yes, it is hard for me. I'm not doing that. Just say it. It's fine, you know. So...
Well, I'm grateful to you and your mum for allowing this all to go ahead and for us to get to hear from you. And I think, you know, as I say, you constantly impress me and amaze me with the complexities of your identity that you navigate, the things that I get to take for granted, and, you know, the ways in which so much of what is inherent to your identity gets co-opted by Western white people all the time. And, you know, that there's such a, I guess, a sense of you hold such integrity in what you do. And I know that, you know, I don't want to sort of make us have a political conversation right now, but I would love to talk about your work with the goddess energy, because you do trainings for women, initiating them into the goddess energy. And obviously, I know this is part of, well, from my training in yoga and the Hindu background, but what is the goddess energy for you, and why does it matter to us now?
I think the simplest way to talk about it is the fierce form that all of us have in ourselves. And being human, it's sometimes easier to look at an image and say, okay, this is what she looks like, or these are the characteristics of the archetype, because the goddess energy or the priestess energy is really about, it's a purified form of the energy that we have, right? It's not anything separate from us. And so when I do the work, what I, you know, I really want to share with all the women, or actually even men, because it, you know, everybody can cultivate that. I think for us to really believe that, how do you bring that out through your own self? For example, famously, Kali is known to be there for destruction, but there the destruction is for a reason. She's bringing balance into the world. It's taken, like, even in India, there is, we can really be pulled into a certain archetype version of Kali. And I keep, you know, bringing it back. So I think I like to simplify it and make it very practical, that don't go to the extremities. You can know of the extremities, but it's important that you use it as what is required for you. So Kali is essentially for me about, how do you voice your opinion? How do you activate your own inner voice? Durga for me is fierceness, that how do you accept that fierceness in you? And similarly, Parvati is a combination of fierceness as well as devotion to her husband, but she also knows boundaries. So a big one for boundaries is, for me, is Parvati. Mary Magdalene is all about love and compassion. For me, that's a version of Mother Mary, I would say, that she really hugs all of you, no matter how you are, where you are, what you've done. And so how can we pull out these characteristics and start to make them useful in our life? Another way to do that is, when we really are feeling lost, we don't know, and life has taken over, remembering, okay, what is life telling me? What is the environment telling me? What kind of archetypal energy do I need to pull in to pull myself up? So if it means that I need to be fierce, okay, here goes, you know, Durga's energy. If I need to bring compassion to myself, I need to bring Mary Magdalene. If it is, I need to bring in the, you know, deep devotion and really feeling into my spirituality, bring in Isis. So, you know, it's really the archetypal energy that's always there present for us. But don't be blinded that it's separate from you, because it is who you are, who all of us are.
Yes, I love that. And I love the, as you say, like, make it applied, make it useful for every day. And how will it, you know, this practical spirituality, how can it improve your life? I would love for you to, you know, you mentioned it was back in 2019 that we first connected and you came into the Institute then. When you sit here now, what, 5 years later, what would you say archetypally is the biggest transformation for you since coming into the Institute?
I think definitely owning the priestess, I would say. I usually didn't like labels. Many times I still don't like them, but I realized it's not the label, it is the archetypal energy. I think that understanding of it and then accepting my priestesshood and seeing so many, you know, lifetimes and versions of that. And the second, though it is related to the priestess, but also how do I show up as a leader in the world? I think that was very clear. And if somebody, you know, there's a joke that I play with myself, anything that is around numerology, astrology and all of that always says, oh, you know, Bhavna is a leader. I'm like, I'm not a leader. I don't want to be a leader. And I understood what that means, that word means, once I finished the first, you know, the third level, because it was stepping into my power. It was becoming the Bhavna who she's meant to be. It is not something separate. I think that takes a lot of courage, a lot of support from all of the sisters, a lot of saying yes to and trusting the curriculum that you've put through and the process that you have taken us through, trusting that, because I know a lot of times that many of us questioned it. And I think, you know, there comes because I had done so much spiritual work, I knew if you're here, Bhavna, there's a reason. You know that in your life by now. You know, it's not, you don't mess up so badly that you can't go back. So this is not messing up. This is just messy, but it's good messy. Okay, yes. I love the mud and the lotus, and maybe that's what's happening. So I think the accepting my priestesshood and being showing up as a leader in the world, no matter what is happening.
Yeah, I love hearing that and the reflection on that journey. And thank you for trusting me, and thank you for trusting the process. And yeah, I feel the same. You know, it's so much about being okay with the messy and not having everything resolved immediately, right? And I think we often look to our spirituality because we want some kind of quick fix or an answer that's going to satisfy the ego. And, you know, you would have seen it, I'm sure, in the work where people come for tarot readings, or they just want you to tell them the answer.
Yeah.
And, you know, I know that you don't do that because that's not the kind of work that you do. But, you know, how do you comfort people or support people or inspire people when they are looking to their intuition simply to be that, like, you tell me, Bhavna, you have the answers? How do you help them with that discomfort, that messiness?
I think I hear them out, first of all, because I do also know women particularly feel that because they are not heard. And so I think that is one of the first things that I also learned in the third level, how to hold a safe container for women. So I allow that to happen. I allow them whatever they need to bring out throughout, whatever it is, allowing that to take place. And of course, by the end of the meltdown, they're already feeling the energy that I'm trying to give away to them.
Yes.
Give to them. And that's what is marvelous about the process of holding that safe container. And so once they've, you know, had the meltdown or whatever they wanted to share, I do tell them that, you know, the answer is within you. It's not about me. I say it in a nice, soft voice, but I am very fierce about the words that I use, because that is the truth. And once, usually, either they are confused or they say they're nodding, but they don't want to accept it. And then we have a, you know, further talk about it. And I think through the process of helping them really come to the answer themselves, I think that is what is important. and that they start to trust themselves. And for some people, I talk to them about the archetypal energies, whether it is any of the goddess energies, whether it is any of the sacred 13 energies. So I ask them that, what are you feeling right now? So I ask, connect them to the archetypal energy through their emotion, because a lot of my work is with emotions as well. So there is, I think it's really holding, allowing them to share and be whoever they are. And once they are able to arrive at that, I tell them it is a it's a muscle that you have to use. Just because you don't know whether intuition is working or not doesn't mean it isn't. It's just maybe we are scared about it. We're scared about something. And you know that fear will never, has fear worked? And I ask them the question, has fear worked in your life till now? Has it helped you? Has it truly helped you? And usually they do arrive at the answer that, probably not. And so then it's easier to bring them back to, okay, let's take that one step towards trusting your intuition. Let's take that another step towards trusting your intuition. And yeah, that's.
I love that. And it really sounds like the definition of becoming unapologetic, because it seems to me that the end point of connecting to your intuition is being that unapologetic woman, because you are so trusting of yourself that you're not trying to please everybody around you. You're not trying to get everybody else to confirm your very existence. So I love that idea of unapologetic being really intuitive, really. Like, that's how my brain's making sense of that. Yeah, I love that. I would love to ask you, what is the vision for your service in the world? Like, 10 years from now, what do you imagine or hope will be the legacy of your work?
So I would say that I would want to see many more women being out there sharing their voices, whatever version of their voices, or even about their sexuality. I think those are the two big things, how we use our voice and how unapologetic we are about our sexuality. Because again, because of the milieu that I come from, because of the land that I come from, which is strange because it's the land of the Kama Sutra, yet everybody knows that we don't talk about it as much. And for me, I want to be the demonstration that even if you're spiritual, even if you're grounded, you have a certain level of, you can have a certain level of success, and that it really depends on how you show up in the world. And just because you run a business or just because you run a spiritual business does not mean that you are not grounded. You're not, you are seeking people to revere you. For me, I would love to see women to really build their own empires in whatever way, not necessarily in a business way, but are they really coming into their own voices? Are they really standing up and saying, I'm in my own sovereignty. This is the kind of life that I want. I would love for somebody to be part of it. I'm not excluding anyone, but that is, I am in full acceptance of who I am. I think that's at the very simplest level, to be able to see women being absolutely okay with everything, the glamour, the shit, the messiness, their voice, the incompleteness of their jobs, or how they've navigated their career. It's all okay because I have lived my life on my own terms,
Yeah.
and that's what I wanted to do.
Oh, I love that. Jema, that is such a powerful message. So, finally, I'm going to ask you, tell us what you are reading right now, or a book that you would recommend that we all go and read.
Well, since it is here, if anybody has not read it, I would recommend your first book.
This was not a pre-planned promo.
Yeah, it wasn't. It wasn't. No, I think Spiritually Fierce is such an easy read, and it has so many elements to it. Like, there are, if you can just practice this over a year. I don't want to tell people do it in a month or 2 months' time because it can feel much. But I think, I think that's definitely one book I would recommend to people. And the other book, which though it's not connected to my work, but it's really helped me in terms of prioritizing my business and my day-to-day is What Got You Till Here Will Not Get You Further. So I think it's a Jack Canfield book. I'm messing up the title, but if if anybody looks up productivity and Jack Canfield and What Got You Here Will Not Get You There, you'll find the title. That's a brilliant practical guide for even in your corporate world, and because it also talk it gives makes you reflect a lot. So I think one practical book, and not that especially Fierce isn't practical, I think it's extremely practical. But yeah, I think it's a combination of both worlds.
I love that. Thank you for such a broad and beautiful spectrum. And I will say that Bhavna is currently training as a teacher of the contents of Spiritually Fierce, which is why it's probably right beside you. And I'm grateful that you are such a dedicated student teacher. And I'm excited for you to take that wisdom out into the world in your own unique way. And of course, we are 2 months into our 18-month journey of the postgraduate diploma in spiritual directorship, which is really the crown, the jewel in the crown of all the training of the Institute. And it is so exciting that we are coming to your homeland in November for our retreat. I know it's a bit of a distance from your house, but hopefully not
It's a
too.
beautiful space.
Oh,
It's
good.
beautiful land, yeah.
And really so grateful that you have continued to journey with me and beside me and with this amazing community that you mentioned, because it is such a privilege to work with you and to see your grace shining and to see your mission becoming realized. And just for those of you who are interested in training with the Institute, Bhavna mentioned the third level a few times, which we now offer in two parts, the method and the trainer program. And we'll share those links as well as all the links to Bhavna's work in the show notes for this episode so you can find out more about her and how to work with her. And I am just so grateful for you and your time and the beautiful way that you shared everything today, my darling. So thank you for being here with me. And thank you to everyone for joining us.
Thank you so much.